You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network, part of Sports Illustrated, giving you daily NFL Draft, Dynasty, and Devy Fantasy Football podcasts.
Welcome inside the Inside the War Room podcast presented by Sports Illustrated on the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network. I am your host, Dante Colonelli, joined by my esteemed co-host, Saray Poole. Saray, my guy, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing, man? We got some football to talk about. That's always great. So
yeah, we got a loaded show. We're doing offensive tackles, summer scouting, guards, summer scouting, and then centers. So Ray's going to take the guards. I'm going to take the centers. And then we're also going to talk about conference realignment because Oklahoma and Texas gave the Big 12 the shaft this week, brother.
I'm out, baby. Break
yeah. up. So we're going to talk about that. I got a cup of coffee. It's 7 o'clock at night. I'm wired. I'm ready to go. You want to get us started? With tackles, who you got it? You got it number three. We're only doing three across the board. We don't want to kill you guys. We're going to cover a 15-ish offensive lineman. I think that's plenty. I think that's enough.
Yes. All right. Well, I'm going to start with one because I want to start the show off with a bang.
Okay. Go big.
Haven't seen anybody have this dude at number one. I know he's been getting some hype, but offensive tackle one for me is Jackson Kirkland from Washington, man. I really like this dude. He's moving. I seen on PFF. He had 25 games at right guard since 2018. He's moving to left tackle. I think last year he played, four or five games at left tackle, however short the Pac-12 season was. Last year was a weird COVID year. But, dude, I mean, he's going to thrive in his own blocking scheme, and he's explosive out of his stance. He's a great athlete, good balance. He covers a lot of ground in pass pro, man. His hands are always moving. He's very active, dude. I think he's very technical. I think he has a slender build. He's 6'7". He's one of 6'7", 295, I think he's listed at. And sometimes that shows his lower body strength can improve sometimes. But, dude, I think when you're talking about tackles, man, technique is so important. And that's stuff that always is going to translate over to the NFL. And I think that's something that he's got down packed pretty well. Dude, I know it's a small sample size of what we've seen from him at left tackle, but he is good, really, really good. Watching Washington play, it's it has nothing to do with the left tackle. Their quarterback play is just so bad. It's just so horrible just watching Washington play. Their quarterback stinks.
I don't even know. Brutal, man. Brutal. It makes me miss Jacob Eason. That's where we're at.
No,
man.
Dude. It made me think of Browning.
Oh, dude, I would have taken Browning. These dudes are worse than him, man.
Yes. Oh. He threw for 50 touchdowns in a season.
Damn right.
He was productive there. But, I think he can control his weight a little bit better. I think there's some times his balance is I don't want to say it's bad, but there's times, it's just the lower body strength. He's, like I said, he plays tall because his pad level is high. So there's times where his balance can improve. Second level, man, I think because he plays with such a high pad level, again, he's a tall guy, this is kind of hard for these guys to get lower, but there are times where he's missing his initial target working to the second level. I think those are things you can coach and work on, man. You can get the pad level lower. I think once his lower body strength improves a little bit, those small tweaks will improve, man. But I think this is somebody who, again, it's a small sample size, so I'm going strictly off of projection here, but in terms of what I watched, dude, those games, dude, he's productive, man. Go back and watch the Oregon State game and just ask those edges and linebackers just how he just mauled them. Dude, I think it's impressive seeing guys who are 6'7", who play tackle, who are almost 300 pounds, who move like they weigh 250, 260. That's one thing that's impressive for me. But if he goes to the right situation at the next level, assuming he is healthy this year and assuming everything goes as planned as far as, he plays every game, this could be a first-round prospect, man. I know it's extremely early, dude, but I really like Jackson Kirkland. So he's my offensive tackle one. And excuse me, left tackle. I don't know if I said he'll play left tackle or not. But
yeah, he played left tackle last year. He's also my offensive tackle one.
I did not expect this. This is amazing.
We agree way too much. But yes. I think we'll disagree on the next two. So I'll skip Kirkland. The only thing I'll say about him Washington lists him at 3'10". He is not 3'10".
He's not 3'10". There's no way. You can just watch him. He's not 3'10".
No, they list him at 6'7", 3'10". I believe he's 6'7". He is not 3'10". Needs to improve the anchor a little bit. But moving on to my offensive tackle two. When I originally did my rankings, I had the NC State kid here, but he's very clearly a guard, so I kicked him inside the guard. So bumping somebody up, I'm going to go with and stay in the Pac-12, but probably not the Pac-12 tackle that you think. Washington State's Abraham Lucas is actually my offensive tackle.
I haven't watched him
too. Okay, that's good. So, but we're staying in the Pac-12. Here's the thing with Lucas, and this is something that I don't know how this is going to be received. I like tackles from the air raid. I do. I always have. And here's why.
Is it because the way they're asked to protect the pass sets?
They get a lot of pass protection reps, my dude. Yes, they have to be good with their feet. They have to be able to quick set and mirror rushers and get into their stance well. And I think Lucas does that. And not only does he do that, he has the NFL size that you want. He's 6'7", 315. I don't know if he's quite 315, but he's definitely over 300 pounds. He's probably like 3'5", 310-ish. You know, he does have a little bit of problem with his anchor, but really quick feet. I have down that he's very well balanced, doesn't get knocked down a lot. He stays on his feet. He doesn't lunge into blocks a ton. His power is average, I would say, but there are some good flashes where you can see him engage his lower body, sink his hips, and kind of drive that rusher off. I think one of the things that really impressed me, obviously, was his pass protection, just smooth experience, short sets, deep sets. He's good with his first punch, makes good use of his length. His natural bend can fail him at times just because he's a high cut guy. You know, this is a guy with a high cut frame. So how much can he sink his hips? I think he can do it well enough, but like, you know, these really bendy guys are going to get him. I don't know how much of that he saw in the Pac-12 because it's the Pac-12, even though I love the Pac-12, I really do. The edge rushers outside of Thibodeau, not great. Maybe the USC kid, but we'll get to that in a couple weeks. Lucas, I think he's just very, very good in pass pro. I think he's a good athlete. I think he has NFL size. I think he has NFL level experience. He's going into like year three, I think, as the starting right tackle at Washington State now. He's played in two different schemes. So there's a lot that he does that I really like. I'm incredibly high on him, obviously. I don't think anyone else has him this high. He got like a firm second round grade for me. But yeah, Kirkland and Lucas, two Pac-12 guys to start it out.
Offensive tackle two for me is, I know a guy you're not really high on, but Evan Neal. I like him, man.
Listen,
the Alabama, I think he's moving to left tackle this year. Leatherwood's gone, right? He's moving over to left tackle. He's got the guard tackle versatility, so that's going to be a thing that's going to be talked about all cycle, as we do all the time. But I thought his hand placement could improve. I thought he was a plus-size mover. There were plenty of times Alabama asked him to pull. He was willing to do that and easily, you know, explosive out of his stance. I thought his pad level looked pretty solid at times. Is he overhyped? You know, I don't want to say he's overhyped because he's an offensive tackle too, but I kind of think that we label these kids something super early, and we just need to let them grow as prospects and as players. And I think that's where Evan Neal is. And I think that the guard class is a little deeper than, or the interior class in general is deeper than the tackle class, in my opinion, this year. But I like Evan Neal, man. I think, man, he can be too aggressive, right? There's times where he's too eager to meet at the point of attack or to meet a moving target. He gets caught lunging and he's, you know, off balance. So that's very apparent. There are also times where defenders get into his chest. If you go back and watch the Texas A&M game, he had a little bit of troubles, man, getting exposed, which probably wasn't his best game on film. But I don't know, man. I like the upside. I like what he brings to the table. He's better when he's attacking downhill, right? Like, it's just when he can just attack downhill, full head of steam, just get his hands on guys. I feel like if he got drafted to the Ravens, he'd be a star. Like, it's just the way they would use him. He'd be used very quickly. Like I said, I thought he was a fluid mover in pass pro. I do think there's some technique things they need to clean up. His feet can be a little choppy. There are times speedy rushers can beat him to the edge. And like I said, his feet get choppy and they cross a little bit. He's kind of like in chasing run position. I just think that there's so much potential here. There's so much just room for him. I don't want to say room for improvement, but I think the ceiling is very high for this player. And I think that with another year as a full start at left tackle in the SEC, I think scouts are going to drool over him. I think the NFL is going to be higher with these tackles, especially because it's Alabama. He's coming from a NFL draft factory.
I know you're not high on him. I know we've talked about him in the chat before, but again, I got a lot of guys to get to, and this is summer, man. So, man, 6 to 8 months from now, this dude may not even be, you know, in the top five. Who knows, right? But I like Evan Neal, dude. I think he's a good prospect. I'm interested to see what the move to left tackle looks like. But I think for a guy who has good guard and tackle versatility, and like I said, has the upside that he has, I think he's going to be a good prospect, man.
All right, we're going to play a game real quick. I'm going to name a prospect. You're going to tell me if you think Evan Neal's better than them.
Oh, geez.
You ready? Jedrick Wills.
No.
Jonah Williams.
No.
Alex Leatherwood.
Yes.
All right. You struggled a little bit. I was just curious.
But I feel like Leatherwood's a guard, and I feel like Neal can strictly be a tackle.
Okay. Yeah, here's my thing with Neal. I like him, and he's not in my top three, so I'm glad you brought him up. Here's the thing. Potential's through the roof. His ceiling on this player is incredibly impressive. He's a great athlete for his size. He has all of the NFL traits that you want. I don't think his technique's good. I think it's a hot mess. And just putting it simply, like, he's on the ground way too much for me. And like, I don't know, maybe like that's just a pet peeve thing for me. I don't like tackles who spend as much time on the ground as Evan Neal does. He lunges in the blocks a lot and just gets left on his face. He's on the ground way too much.
So that's
something that personally bothers me. If he cleans that up this year, yeah, top 10, maybe top 15 talent. I'll go to tackle three so we can round this out. We got a lot of guys to cover. I'm staying in the Pac-12, brother. I got Sean Ryan, the offensive tackle out of UCLA.
He's four for me right now. He's four.
All right. Yeah. So he was originally four for me, but I bumped the NC State kid to guard. So he's now tackle three, 6'5", 318. I think that's about what he looks on film. Gave him a solid second round grade. Simply put, I think this is a player that is just a good athlete. Possesses good size, good athlete. He's quick to mirror rushers, has clean footwork, precise footwork. His pass sets and hips are very, very smooth. He can defend the outside shoulder. He can handle inside counters. He does have lapses in play at times in pass protection when he can't get his hands on defenders early. He likes to attach early and kind of jump set and engage his length and then kind of mirror with his feet. And that's what he should do. That's where his traits lend. But when he misses with his hands, things kind of start to deteriorate. I think he has really good power. I don't know if he's overwhelming, but he's solid. He can create displacement. I think he's scheme versatile. I think you can put him in his own scheme. I think you can put him in a man scheme. You know, there are just some times on his film where he doesn't, or at least the way that I felt about Ryan, and one of the reasons I ranked him just below Lucas, they're basically tied, but I gave Lucas the edge at OT2 because Ryan just sometimes to me does not look fully engaged on film, where he just has like lapses in play and you're kind of sitting there. It's like, I know you're better than the dude across from you. Why is he beating you? And I don't know if that's an effort thing. I don't know if it's just an inconsistency across the board. But when this player is on, I think he can be OT1 in this class if he really puts it together and is consistent. I mean, there's absolutely nothing holding him back in the traits department. So I really like him. It's just that there's these weird lapses in play. Sometimes it's a play. Sometimes it's a drive. Sometimes it's never typically a whole game. He just has like a quarter where it's just like, what are you doing, my dude? You know, kind of stuff. But yeah. His pass protection is very, very solid. He's got the size. He's got the athleticism. This is an NFL caliber tackle through and through. He seems to be a little bit of a controversial guy on draft Twitter. There's some people that have him at OT1. There was this huge beef about re-anchor ability the other day, which, like, good Lord, are we nerds? My God.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, that was a thing. But I really like Sean Ryan, and I cannot believe my top three tackles are all from the Pac-12. Not the Big 12. Crazy.
Big 12 may be in the Pac-12. We'll get to that later.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Offensive tackle three for me. I haven't seen much hype as far as this high for him, but I like the kid. He's going to need some more experience. I think last year was his first year as a starter, full-time starter, but that's Charles Cross out of Mississippi State.
Okay, cool. He's like my OT4, so we covered the switch here. That's good.
I like the guy, man. He plays with a mean streak. He's aggressive as a run blocker. He's going to finish his man. He plays bully ball, man. Can play in a phone booth, man. He's not going to shy away from competition. Dude, he's got to add more weight. That's very apparent in the lower half.
go back and watch the Alabama game. I know Christian Barmore got in his chest a little bit. Power rushers do give him problems, man. I think so. He can add on some more weight. And the play for a guy who's so aggressive as he is, I think the play strength can improve. There are too many times I don't like when guys are getting in his chest. For you to be so powerful moving forward, you got to be able to kind of, you know, using that boxing analogy, fight going backwards, dude. So, like, guys are getting in your chest. I mean, there's times where he recovers, and there's times where, okay, this is just, you know, the pocket's collapsing on your quarterback. We got to work on that. But for a guy, like I said, who was his first time as a full-time starter in the SEC, those are kind of things that, you know, that grown man strength just isn't there yet. And Christian Barmore was very successful against them, and it's Christian Barmore. He's a very strong human being. But that's stuff that can clean up. His footwork can get a little choppy when he's beat with speed. There are times where he likes to cross his feet when guys are getting the edge on him. And there's other times where he goes, okay, you're going to try to beat me with speed. So he's super explosive in his passes so he doesn't give up the edge that, like, you know, the very next snap. So that's stuff that can be cleaned up. But I think the ceiling for this player is very, very high. For a kid who's probably 19, I'm assuming he is. I think he was a redshirt freshman or freshman last year. He's going to grow. He's going to get better. And playing against the NFL level competition that's in the SEC, you can only grow from here. Texas A&M offensive, it's an offensive line, but Texas A&M just overall, they have a lot of draftable guys this year, man. They're putting together a nice recruiting class in the past few years over there at Texas A&M.
You mean Mississippi State?
I said Texas A&M, Mississippi State. Excuse me. I like Charles Cross a lot, dude. He's powerful. I like his anchor ability. Pass pro, dude. Like I said, he can be explosive at it, very explosive out of his stance, dude. But I just want him to add more weight. That's apparent. Like I said, dude, he's probably eating peanut butter Jerry sandwiches as we speak, right? If I'm saying it, that the program over Mississippi State has to be saying it, dude. But again, I really like what I've seen from him as a first time starter. Extremely early, but from what I've seen, I think this guy has a chance to be something special down the road.
Yeah, I really like Cross too. I think that he's quite good. All right, so we'll transition to the interior. Like I said, we're just going to do top threes. I have the centers, Saray has the guards. You want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I took the centers, and I get to talk about a player who is a brand guy for me right off the top, and that is Iowa center Tyler Linderbaum, a junior listed at 6'3", 289 on the Iowa roster. This is a player that I identified last summer and put my stamp on, and then he decided to go back to school this year, which I think ultimately was probably a good decision. Linderbaum came to Iowa as a defensive tackle. And he ended up transitioning to the offensive line in 2019, and he started every single game at center in 2019 for Iowa switching to the offensive line. And then obviously in 2020, he played in every game last year, and he was quite impressive. I think one of the things that you get with him, and this kind of goes back to his high school profile, three-sport athlete, wrestler, baseball, football, all that good stuff. Incredibly, incredibly impressive athletic ability. He reminds me a lot. Saray and I were talking pre-show. He reminds me a lot of Garrett Bradbury coming out of NC State. He was a first-round pick in the Minnesota Vikings. His NFL transition has been, I'm going to go with suboptimal. But I do think that Linderbaum is that type of athlete, right, where he's incredibly smooth and silky in pass protection. And also as a center, he's able to get out into space. He pulls up to the second level. He's very explosive, makes really, really good reach blocks. I mean, he can just get to guys that other centers cannot because he's such a good athlete. And I do think, again, when you talk about somebody being comp to Garrett Bradbury, the immediate red flag that pops up is anchor. And I do think, again, listed at 289 by Iowa, he put on strength last year from 2019 to 2020. Hopefully he puts on a little bit more in 2020 to 2021, and he can kind of grow that profile. He's a little bit light in the pants. His anchor is a little bit suboptimal times. Now, I will say I do think that he is stronger than Garrett Bradbury. I don't think his anchor is quite that problematic, but that is definitely the biggest red flag in his game. So if he can add strength again this season like he did last year, I think he's going to be a first-round pick. I just think he's too good of an athlete. He's where the position's going. Zone-blocking schemes are going to want him. He's going to be he's the perfect zone-blocking scheme center. He's going to test out of the water at the combine for his size. So I really, really love Tyler Linderbaum. This is 2 years of love for me. He's my center one, but it's a very, very good center class. There's a couple other guys who are super close, but Linderbaum for me just takes the cake. He's got the whole profile.
So since I'm taking the guards, I'm just going to go ahead and go with Kenyon Green out of Texas A&M. It was a very smart person, a well-respected person on Draft Twitter who thinks maybe one day down the road this prospect could rival Quentin Nelson as maybe one of the better guards in the NFL.
Woo. Okay. Spicy.
I'm not going to say
Spice.
Who. I respect his take. I respect his works. But amazing play strength for anybody like who hasn't watched this dude play. He will bully you, man. He can play in tight spaces. He's a very good anchor. He's a mauler who finishes blocks. A very good upper body strength. I think he has the highest upside out of any guard in this class. I think that he's going to be that special. I think the potential to be an elite talent is there for him. Texas A&M has a lot of draftable guys. He's just one of the few this year that I think he was amazing last year. I think he's going to take another step forward this year. I heard he may be moving to tackle.
He is moving. He's going to play left tackle this year.
Okay, I'm not a fan of that. You're so good at guard. Can we just please keep you there? I mean, he may be successful, and he may eat my words, whatever. But, like, I know they're losing guys. There's another reason why they're moving him over there. But, like, Jimbo, we got to recruit, baby. This is what we do. It's the SEC, man. We shouldn't have to be moving guys who are so special at one position to another. But on the other end, if I'm saying he has the highest upside, maybe he will be a special tackle. Who knows? But I'm a firm proponent of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, dude. I think we should keep him there at guard. He was so good last year. His hand technique can improve. Sometimes the placement and timing can be off a little bit. He can be too aggressive at times. And I think sometimes he's not always finishing blocks. And I don't know if you noticed, when he's going to the second level, he's not completely walling guys off. Sometimes defenders get back into pursuit and make the play. There's small things you could clean up. I'm nitpicking here, man, because he was really, really good last year. But tends to lunge, and then, he loses balance, can get knocked off a little bit. That's occasionally. That's not as bad as Evan Neal at times. But I like Kenyon Green. This is a special young man, a special talent, who was very, very good at the guard position. And who knows what the tackle switch is going to bring for him. I would have kept him at guard, but I'm not really sure what Texas A&M's, offensive line, recruiting looks like. So maybe there's a reason why he's got to go over there. But hoping for the success. But if, at worst, if he doesn't, play good at tackle, scouts can always go back and refer to 2020 film and see how good of a guard he was. And if he was to hear his name in the first round as a guard, I would not be surprised. I know there's a whole debate about, the value of taking a guard in the first round and all that stuff, but this is a good football player.
Yeah. I think Kenyon Green's a first round guard. I would draft him in the first round. I think he's incredibly, incredibly impressive, but like you, I'm pretty skeptical of that move to tackle. I don't know if he's quite that guy. I think he'll be fine. I don't think it's going
to
be an
athlete to pay tackle.
He could, but like, why? I don't think he's like a plus plus athlete for tackle. He's a plus plus athlete for guard. And there is a difference. Yeah.
Yes.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe he'll blow us out of the water.
The job is just completely different. What you're asked to do and the type of people you're going to face are just completely different. So
especially in the SEC, man. Exactly. Yeah, it's not the Pac-12, brother. You got some mean dudes on the other side.
I don't think he's going to suck at the position. I just don't understand the switch when the film is just so good at guard. I would have kept a kid there. But
yeah,
I ain't Jimbo Fisher. He knows his team better than me. So I don't know, Jack.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. All right. So going back to centers, my center two, and by the way, Green would be my IOL one if we were combining the group. But Jared Patterson from Notre Dame is my center two. He is a 6'4", 305 senior up on that Notre Dame offensive line. We know how much Notre Dame loves to produce NFL offensive linemen. We saw a couple of guys go pretty high last year. Aaron Banks went to the 49ers, I believe, in the third round, I think off the top of my head. And obviously, my Miami Dolphins traded up for Liam Eichenberg in the second round. Jared Patterson was probably the best offensive lineman on Notre Dame last year, and I don't really think it was close. I'm going to be honest. I think he's incredibly, incredibly impressive. Super reliable player in pass protection. Very, very good technique. His pass sets are clean. His first punch is well located. He recruits his length. His hands are quick. One thing you have to watch for when you're scouting centers is when they snap the ball, can they still get leverage? Can they still get their hands inside the chest plate of the defender and recruit their length? Because, they have to snap the ball and then get hand placement. Those linemen just fire right out, right? So how good are you in those areas? Patterson's incredibly impressive in that area. He can also re-anchor a lot, and that's something I like to look for in centers a lot, because a lot of times they can lose initial contact, but then, you know, can you sit down and really anchor after losing initial contact? Patterson does that incredibly well. He keeps the integrity of the pocket very, very well, which was imperative for Ian Book last year, who was just a scatterbrain quarterback running around. Patterson had absolutely no problem keeping it. At least, you know, the crest of the pocket was fine for Ian Book the entire season, man. Just a super impressive player. Really, really consistent hand placement. He's very balanced. I do think he lunges once in a while, but I'm nitpicking. I think he's very solid. Really smart player. Loved how, you know, how in tune he was with his own technique and with his teammates and how to handle different pressures and pass off defenders and things like that. I think he's flexible in his hips. He's a tremendous zone blocking center. He seals off rushing lanes really well. You want to see guys get their butt to the sideline and completely seal that other rusher off, right? You have to be quick. You have to get hand placement inside the chest plate. Then you have the upper body strength to turn guys out of that gap. Patterson does all three of those things very well. I think he's going to be a hot commodity for zone teams, kind of like how I talked about Tyler Linderbaum. I think he can be a power guy as well. I think you can work him into that scheme. He's not overwhelming in that area, but he's got good lower body strength. He can create displacement, and I think he'd be a great pull guy. I think he's got the athletic ability to do it. So really, really well-rounded prospect. I think my only thing with Patterson probably is anchor. I think it's fine. It's good for a center, but you know, he could add a little bit of weight to his frame. I just think he's a little bit thin in the lower body. You know, you want to see that bubble butt sometimes on your lineman. I'm not sure he quite has that, but neither does Linderbaum. So, you know, you kind of have two parallels. They're ranked very, very similarly on my board. They both have 86s. They're both first-round centers. I really, really like Jarrett Patterson. I think that he's going to be someone that a lot of people talk about at the back end of the round, of the first round, just like I said with Linderbaum. So two really, really good centers right off the top there. I think that both those guys are going to be potential first-rounders.
All right, so I'm going to go with my guard number two here. It's Darian Kennard. Look, I know you played right tackle. He's a guard, okay? Listen, if you watch Kentucky play, this is like a power offense, dude. We're getting down here. We're attacking people. We're mauling guys, moving people off the ball. And he's not being asked to vertical pass it. And that's not to say he can't do it, but I just don't think when he's asked to do it, it's not his strong suit. He's more of a jump set type of guy. He's great for inside zone. It's just because he's a mauler. He's a bully. He can play in a phone booth. I think he has great power. I think his upper body strength is good. He's a bully at the point of attack. He has good athleticism for a guy of his size. And he has a huge lower body. But also with that, you know, the size is he needs to lower his pad level. And there are times where it's just very apparent his pad level and his place is a little too high. Also, man, his hand placement can need improvement. It's not consistent enough for me. It's not horrible. It's not bad, but it's just not consistent enough. It's small. These are small coaching points, things you can fix. And I don't know, man. He can work to the second level very well. I think what for him, dude, he's a right tackle who should be playing guard. We had the same conversation about, I'm not comparing these guys as prospects, but just kind of similar in terms of what happened. But like Jackson Carman as last year, we all thought that he was a big tackle, but he's a guard, and Cincinnati drafted him to do so. So I'm surprised Kentucky doesn't have him doing that now, but I don't want to say almost certainly, but he should be playing guard at the next level. And I think NFL teams will see that once they start digging deep into his film. But I like Kennard, man. He's getting a lot of hype from a lot of people actually on draft Twitter and just all around who, you know, are watching the tape. But this is a player who has a high upside, like small coaching points that can fix some of the small tweaks I talked about. But this is a guy who, man, the NFL is always going to be hungry for offensive linemen, dude. And I really think that this guy can – come draft day, man, who knows where he's going to be at, but this is for sure. He would not be surprised if you're hearing his name, you know, back in the first round, early second round, because he's playing tackle now, but this is a guard, man. This dude's going to be somewhere. The Steelers could use him a lot. Like, he would fit what the Steelers would want to do as far as running the football goes. But again, I like Kennard out of Kentucky.
Yeah, Kennard's another guy that I originally ranked as a tackle and then kicked him inside to guard. So I totally agree with you there. I actually don't hate the Jackson Carman comp.
I wrote it down.
I don't hate it. I get it. I don't know if it's like it. Oh, it's perfect, but I get what you're saying, right? It's just like this big burly dude who's like should be a guard.
He's not a tackle.
I get it. All right. My center three is Ricky Stromberg from the University of Arkansas. He's a junior, 6'4", 316, listed at. I think a player who's very, very much flying under the radar. I have him with a fringe first-round grade. I think that he is incredibly impressive. A lot of what I've already talked about, man, these top three centers are absolutely phenomenal. I was blown away with their film. I think they're all very, very good. Stromberg, I've written down in my report, excellent and consistent pass protector, good movement skills, pass sets, hand usage, and anchor. He rarely loses a rep or gives ground. Displays good balance across his film, shows consistent, well-timed hand strikes and pass protection. In the running game, he does a good job to gain inside placement and control the chest of defenders while recruiting his length effectively. And I think my only knock on Stromberg, defaulting into Miami Dolphin talk, Stromberg is a guy that I think is just a little bit underwhelming in the power department. He doesn't really create a ton of push. He's okay. I don't think he's strength deficient, or that he lacks functional strength. I just think that, you know, he's not going to be a mauler. He's not going to be a guy finishing blocks into the ground. You know, he's not, you know, overly physical. He's not overly aggressive. And I do like to see those mean streaks across, you know, offensive linemen, whether that's tackle, guard, or center. I like to see those guys, you know, really enforce their will up front, you know, set the tone, if you will. God, I sound like a boomer, but, you know, I really like what he does in that area. I think he's got a very, very good anchor, really good movement skills. You know, he can get out into space. He can get up to the second level. He's explosive out of his stance. He's got no problem handling gap shooting, you know, three techs and different things like that. So really, really like Ricky Stromberg. I think he's very, very solid. Those top three centers are graded incredibly, incredibly closely for me. Would not be surprised if they come in any order, one, two, three, during the draft. And I wouldn't be surprised if any of them get picked in the first round. I think they're all close, at least.
All right, for me, man, you talked about three techs, man. Emil Ekior, Alabama, him and Evan Hill bullied three techs a lot last year, man. Combo blocks. It's fun watching those dudes play. He's very physical at the point of attack. I like his ability to reach the second level. I think he's a plus-size mover. He's another guy that Alabama has no problem asking to pull and, you know, reach the second level, reach targets, linebackers, safeties, whoever it may be. I think he's exceptional in space, man. I think that he moves well for guys of his size. I think he has good hand placement. I think for him to be able to work the way he can in tight spaces for, again, a guy of his size is very impressive for me. I thought he had a good anchor. Also, a lot of guys I've talked about, this may be just a young offensive line thing. These guys are just tend to be over-aggressive, but he lunges or leans forwards on occasion. When he misses a block, sometimes he struggles to recover. His footwork can be, you know, can be more consistent in pass pro. And I think he overshoots his pursuit angles. And I think with him being so aggressive, he just loves the context so much. I think he's always just thinking, okay, I got to get there. I got to go now. And I think you got to learn to be patient. You got to learn how to time up your blocks, how to place yourself in the best position possible so your defender is not getting back into pursuit. But I like what he brings to the table. He's a young guy. And I think this year, a huge year for him. And I think, again, Alabama is producing these guys, you know, at an alarming rate, dude. But man, I think the upside for him is very, very high. I'm not sure. I'm interested to see where you have him at, but I like Ekior, man. He brings a lot to the table. And is he a sophomore this year? Or is he a junior?
I have him as a junior.
As a junior. Okay. Yeah. I like him a lot, man. I think that, I have a lot of more guys to watch, but I think this player is going to be, his name's going to be called early come draft day.
Yeah, I gave him a solid second round grade. Yeah. He's my interior offensive lineman six, but my third guard, it looks like. So we're right in the same area.
Yeah.
So that wraps it up. Summer scouting for offensive line. I think it's going to be a really good class just overall before we switch to conference realignment. Really like the tackle class, really like the guard class, really like the interior class. The NFL needs an infusion of offensive line talent. I think it's going to get it this year across the board. I think this is a really talented group of guys. All right. We got to pivot. Big things happening in college football.
Stop. I had to ask. I'm so sorry to cut you off.
All right, go.
So off the rails, just hit my head. What's up with Xavier Howard? Where do you want him to go? I know you're
wrong. Oh, you got to bring this crap up.
I'm sorry. I have to ask. Come on.
I mean, I think there's I'm going to be brief. I did like a 40-minute live show when the news broke last night on DolphinsTalk.com. So if you are a Dolphins fan and you want to hear me elaborate, you can go there and listen to that show. My basic gist of this is that I think I think the Dolphins are being petty and Xavier Howard's kind of a moron. I think it's, you know, it's a little bit of both, right? Like, you know, he releases a statement and he publicly admits that he didn't read his last contract.
Yes.
Which is incredibly, I mean, honest, stupid. But also stupid. I like, you shouldn't have signed it, frankly. Yes. And then, you know, again, I'm taking Howard at his word, and Howard is saying, I just wanted them to bump up some of my guaranteed money this season. I didn't want a new contract. If the Dolphins weren't willing to pay him a little extra money this year, he's the best player on the team, man. Really? I don't know. And a lot of Dolphins fans, I mean, everyone's just anti-Howard now. He's like, you know, the scourge of the earth in South Florida. No, he's terrible. He's never – his knees are awful. He's going to be debilitated. He's going to be in a nursing home in about 6 weeks, according to Dolphins Twitter. But where Howard is going to go – I don't know. I mean, whoever gives me the most, I really did like Kansas City, New Orleans, Dallas. Those three teams come to mind.
Away from the Chiefs. I said the Chiefs also, but please don't come to the AFC West. I've had enough.
Yeah, man, dude. If they get Howard, brother, woo.
Okay, this is the thing, though, man. I'll be brief because we're supposed to talk about something else. But okay, if you didn't understand the contract, right, and your agent, who he fired, we'll give him credit for that. The agent who you fired, for one, didn't, I guess, explain the contract enough. I'm not sure what the hell happened there. Why not go get a lawyer to get a second opinion? Hey, man, look over this. I'm not understanding what's in here. That's what Lamar Jackson does. He doesn't have an agent. He has a lawyer who reads over his stuff. It's you save money that way also.
You got to remember, this is the same guy who was charged in a drive-by shooting of his agent's house that he fired. You know, he didn't end up being the guy who fired the shots, but... that is a thing that happened, you know? Geez, like, man. His story is incredibly weird. And I'm, like, very pro-player. I'm, like, pretty pro-Howard, frankly. Yeah. But, like, I get it from the Dolphins. I do. I get it, even though I've been very hard on them. But, like, man.
I get it from both sides. Props to the Dolphins for structuring this thing the way they did. We're not going to front load a ton of money. We're not going to back in a ton of money. We're going to give you this in workout bonuses, signing bonus. We're going to prorate it. We have to cover our own asses here, for lack of a better word, because you do have knee issues and you're 27, right? I know you've been super productive, but you've played, what, I think one 16-game season your entire career? Or is it two?
Something like that.
Either way, I don't know. He's a top five corner. He deserves his money. Whoever's trading for him, you have to know that he's just not asking for a new deal. He just wants more guaranteed money bumped into this year. So somebody's going to do that. Yeah, but moving on. I just had to get your thoughts on that.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I'm done with it. I sent like five tweets last night, and then I immediately started getting replies, and I just muted them all.
That's what you have to do, man.
Yeah, like one of them has like 40 replies, and I've seen one of them.
Like, dude, I just 80% of them are probably bots.
Oh, dude, it's just Dolphins Twitter, man. We could do a whole episode of me just talking about Dolphins Twitter being insane, man. Today, right now, they're in a whole hizzy because Tua's 55-yard deep ball to Albert Wilson wobbled a little bit, and people are arguing about whether or not it was a duck and whether or not that – this is a real thing that's happening on, like, big accounts. Yeah. All right, we're moving on. Nice. Conference realignment, baby.
Yes.
Doing my best to summarize. So basically we got reports that Oklahoma and Texas were looking to leave the Big 12, and it was kind of like this big bombshell. But, you know, when it first came out, it was kind of like, oh, this is a long shot. We're not really – they're just exploring their options. And then every single day it increased more. We got more smoke. We got more reports. We got, you know, Oklahoma and Texas missed a Big 12, like AD's meeting. They didn't show up to that. And then Oklahoma and Texas were kind of like, yeah, well, we're just going to do what's best for us. Wink, wink. And then they eventually did formally request to leave the Big 12 and have formally applied for SEC membership. Jesus Christ, forgot the name. Forgot the word membership. For SEC membership, and they are going to vote on that, I believe, tomorrow. It will take effect in 2025, or Oklahoma and Texas can pay a buyout and be in the SEC next season.
$76 million each.
Yeah, which is, some Nothing. Might say, a fair amount of money, but for them,
it's not,
probably
it's not.
Not a lot.
It's not a lot.
So the SEC right now could be taking Oklahoma and Texas, two big powers. We don't have a ton of time to spend on this, but there's also like the Big 12 might just actually collapse now, even though they're only losing two players. Apparently, there's a conspiracy. This just came out Wednesday night.
The ESPN thing.
Yeah, ESPN is working with SEC and the AAC, which is a conference that I cover as a beat reporter, to snipe Big 12 teams. I have no doubt that the AAC is like trying to snipe some teams, but like this whole ESPN conspiracy thing is wild. But that is where we're at in conference realignment right now. We've heard like the Pac-12 is coming to swoop in and take some teams. Iowa State apparently has been talking to the Big Ten. I mean, it's just a hot mess. We might see like completely new conferences. We might have a Big Four. We might have a Big One. Now, like, the SEC might just gobble up the rest of college football and then secede. So what are your thoughts on this? How do you think it affects, I mean, everything? I mean, it just kind of – this has been crazy, man.
So we'll start from a simple college football standpoint. Recruiting, Texas wins big. Oklahoma, they win big. Oklahoma, you're already bringing in top quarterback recruits every year. Now you have that selling point of, hey, man, you can come play corner for us. You can come play safety for us in the SEC, because where they're lacking every time they've gone up against those SEC schools, they get bullied up front. So from a recruiting standpoint, I think now your conference prestige is going to sell kids a little more on why you should come here, because if you're going to survive in this conference, you got to be able to run the football and stop the run. I know a lot of it's pace and space now. It's, you know, it's everything's different now a little bit. But, you know, big boys up front are still winning in the trenches in the SEC. The fat boys are still important. Texas, I don't think they're going to win crap. Okay, they're going to recruit well. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't – dude, you're going 9-4 or 8-3, whatever it is in the Big 12, and you're going to come over here and compete in the SEC. I think Texas is extremely overrated. It's their brand that keeps their recruiting hopes alive every year. I know they had the number one overall player in the country, Quinn Ewers. I hope I pronounced his name right. But my man decommits, goes to Ohio State. Now he's trying to get out of his senior year so he can enroll early at Ohio State. So if you can't keep top recruits now and you're in the Big 12, what the hell is going to happen? You're in the SEC. I don't know. I think Oklahoma will be competitive. I'm not saying they're going to be the same 11-1 or undefeated team that they are in the Big 12 and consistently win SEC. I don't think Florida's won an SEC championship since 2008. So that just goes to show how competitive the SEC is. Georgia has been there. Kirby's been there for, 4 or 5 years now. And they've, one SEC title? Or do they have none?
I will check.
I do know that they lost in the national championship, so to give them credit for that to Alabama. And that was a famous Tua Devonta Smith connection. But
yeah, but I think Alabama was the higher seed in that game.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think Georgia's won a conference championship since Kirby's been there. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But like you said, man, this is getting to the point where the Big 12 would not survive without Texas and Oklahoma. These two are your moneymakers. These two are your people, the reason why you're bringing in so much revenue. The Big 12 did try to do a thing where they were going to take some revenue from the other schools and give more to Texas and Oklahoma, which is kind of jacked up. But at the same time, these are the guys generating more revenue. They're kind of treating it like a dog-eat-dog world. But they're not going to survive, man. I know they tried to say we may possibly get Cincinnati to come over here, whatever. But there's no way this conference survives revenue-wise or just attention-wise from a football or fan perspective, because you're
okay, so gone. Sorry to cut you off. I think they won it in 2017. I think
2017.
You're right.
Okay.
Yeah, so that they beat Auburn in 2017. Yeah. The one before that was 2005.
So that, again, it goes to show how competitive the SEC is. If you're the SEC, you're obviously putting Oklahoma on the other side of Alabama because you want that huge conference SEC championship, Oklahoma versus Bama. That'd be huge from a revenue and again, fan perspective. Texas A&M is trying their best to not get Texas in here, but this thing's going to get passed, right? You're just going to have to recruit at the end of the day. This is what college football is, man. I don't know, man. The Big 12 is no longer going to be a thing, in my honest opinion. I don't know how much longer they're going to survive without the two moneymakers. The Pac-12, the AAC, dude, the Big 10. Iowa State makes sense in the Big 10. Kansas has been reaching out to the Big 10. So if it was me, can we kick Kansas to the FCS level? I don't know why they're –
For football,
strictly football. Basketball, they're so competitive, but like, yeah. I don't know. They're going to get bullied wherever they go. It's just a program that nobody's ever going to be able to rebuild. It's just the nature of the game. I don't know, man. I think it's going to make for a crazy, crazy switch. We're moving to the 18 playoff, and now with Oklahoma and Texas, and now we're getting to the point where now we're probably going to see 3 or 4 SEC schools in the college football playoff, which is going to piss off a lot of fans. And 2 years from now, they're going to ask to increase it to 12. I don't know, man. It's all for money at this standpoint. The money that's going to be generated for both Texas and Oklahoma is all they're doing. Texas probably can't keep Longhorn Network, right? Just because the contractual situation with ESPN and SEC Network, how that whole thing goes down. But either way, man, they're printing money over this thing, and this is why they're trying to get this thing rolling now, man. I'd love to see this happen next season. It'd be great. I don't think it will, but the Big 12 is going to do everything in their power to not let this thing happen immediately, because they know they can't survive money-wise without these two teams. But it's going to be competitive, and I think that's what football needs, is more competition. So I'm here for it.
So you're Texas, right? Let's play a game. How many 10-win seasons does Texas have since the year 2009? How many 10-win seasons? So 10 or higher?
None.
One.
One. That is
horrible. Since 2009, it was 2018, Tom Herman, 10-4. They won the Sugar Bowl. And then in 2009...
That was the whole semi-back revenge.
Yes. In 2009, they went 13-1. They lost in the BCS championship game. Yeah, after that, they went 5-7. And then their only other 10-win season since losing in that BCS national championship game is the Sugar Bowl, Sam Ellinger, we're back thing against Georgia. So, look, I get it. Texas is going to make buku bucks. I understand. Brother, you are not competing in the Big 12 right now. You're not
competing in the SEC.
You weren't even in the Big 12 championship game last year. Yeah, Iowa State.
No. Do you have any faith in Steve Sarkisian turning his program around to a powerhouse? Like, honestly?
Maybe. I don't know. I just think there has to be, and we're getting like way off topic here talking to Texas, but like I just think honestly there needs to be an acceptance that Texas is not
good.
They are probably average. Two stages down from the Alabamas of the world. They really are. I think it's Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State have their own tier. And then it's like Oklahoma, Georgia, a couple other schools who can, they'll compete, they'll jump up into the top. And then, Texas is kind of in that third tier. Like, yeah, they're good. They can compete. They can certainly win 10 games. They can certainly be better than they've been. But, man, going to the SEC has been tough. And you were talking about A&M. It just got reported in the last 30 minutes that they are probably going to approve the expansion, or at least it's been recommended by their internal people that they should approve the expansion.
Yeah.
So even though they were initially against it, it seems like they're on board. So that might be a 14-0 sweep. So we'll see if they decide to pay the bailout. I'm with you. I'm down with it. I think
I like chaos, man.
Yeah, I'm cool. I think it's going to be a little bit weird. And one of the things that I always liked about the SEC, again, outside of A&M, but like I did always appreciate that the SEC was at least a little bit geography-based. Like all the teams were Southeastern Conference. Texas and Oklahoma very much are not, and I get that. I don't know. I'm a fan of like the conferences being, geographically grouped, I guess, but that is certainly not the case anymore. It's just not. The Pac-12 kind of is, but like the American has teams in Philadelphia and in Texas. Like there's a ton of conferences that just aren't like that, even though I like that. We'll see. I think it makes for a really interesting conference. It's going to make for a lot of good football. I'm down with it. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Oh, man. What position are we going to go over next?
We can do interior defensive line or we can do edge. I did the interior defensive line group and I'm going to say it was not a good time, but we do have to do it eventually. So it's up to you. We can do edge or interior defensive line.
We'll figure it out, man.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inside the War Room presented by Sports Illustrated on the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network. If you have not already, please go and leave us a 5-star review. We gave you about 15 extra minutes today of random stuff. I think we earned our 5-star review. So if you have not already, please go leave that on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this to, and be sure to tune in next week. Like Siri talked about, we're going to talk about defensive line, whether that's edge, whether that's interior. Maybe we'll combine it into one show because we're running out of weeks before football starts, quite frankly. But we'll see how that goes. And again, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Peace.